In this podcast, I want to talk about colour. Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, that sort of thing. And I suppose the take-home message is, as you listen to it, you'll sort of categorise yourself. Are you just the simple person which got colours, got it, move on in life? Or are you the more subtle person that actually dives down into the science of things and goes behind things? Now, I'm unfortunately of the latter, and I've found that as I've moved around in life, I've encountered a lot of people who are of the former, the quick, I've got the idea, got the cultural knowledge which has been handed to me, I'm not going to apply it, and that, they're a bit of argy-bargy type of people. Apologies if you are of the former. This is more a talk to the latter type of people, the more sciencey type of people. This is Peter Hill Explains, where, as part of my cardiac rehab, getting back into the classroom and teaching, I try to start explaining things. Now, from the outset, I'm a spectroscopist. This area is almost so large that I sort of know in advance that I'm going to have some trouble with it, trying to get it all laid out. And to lay it out really simply, I can really see people who have got in-depth knowledge of it and the people who've got a very simplistic knowledge of it. And that for me, is a sort of a spectrum of knowledge which I'm talking to. So the most intricate knowledge is to do with lasers, black body radiations, types of cells. The least, I suppose, in-depth knowledge is people who just take what they've received as what they've learnt in school. It's identifying different colours, and they blithely accept the colour spectrum which has been handed to them. So you've got, in terms of colour spectrum that humans can perceive, you've got the limit of human perception. You've got something called the Adobe RGB, which is sort of a scientifically true push of machines to display a subset of those colours that humans can observe, and then you've got sort of a commercially expedient called sRGB, S red, green, blue spectrum, which is the sort of colours you see in the web. Yeah, and indeed, for someone who's into colours, you can look at something and can say, oh, what spectrum are they using? So if you actually see an artist, that they grasp certain colours, have certain availability. When they discover them, they use colours in different ways. It's a very beautiful thing to see. And then I suppose the interesting thing to me is to actually speak with people, and in general, if they don't care, they're going to be hard customers in a whole lot of other regions in terms of life, in terms of their colours perceptions, their colour perception of people will be restricted and convenient and fast, easy to go. So let's go back to colour, and let's not talk about the way you perceive it, because obviously a colour is a psychological effect. Certain wavelengths of light hit your eye and it triggers something in your brain which says, look, that is green. Let's go beyond on that. To think of what light is. Light is electromagnetic radiation. Electromagnetic radiation comes from and ends up in an antenna. So an antenna transmits it. An antenna, in most cases, are an atom. An antenna is an electron in a circuit going up and down a circuit, which is the atom. They've got the central nucleus, and the electron is pulsating. It changes its pulsation to emit a wavelength, a single photon of light. And this will travel through space and will travel into your eye, and a molecule in your eye, a dye receptor in your eye, if it's in a particular cone cell, I'll get into this a bit later on, will say, ha-ha, well, that's I'm stimulated by this. And there'll be other cone cells which it won't stimulate. I'll go into it. So you've got an antenna, which, if you like, is oscillating at a single frequency. So a single photon, single excitation, has a single frequency, a spectral frequency. That is, if you imagine a long rope and you oscillate it, there's one sine wave frequency of it. All waves coming into a beach is, if there's no wave sets, it's a continuous uniform waves, all exactly the same height, or coming in at one frequency. Another, I suppose, a frequency you could have. It's very hard to think of musical instruments which have purely one frequency. I was trying to think of it like I suppose you could have a... Oh, here's probably an example. Whistling is pretty amazing, that if you look at a spectroscope, that's pretty one frequency. And so a single atom heated up will produce a single frequency, a spectral frequency, what we call a pure colour or an absolute zero colour. I'm going to say absolute zero colour, or actually negative temperature colour for a laser beam. So you can have an individual atom, or you can actually have a set of mirrors and an amplification medium between it, which amplifies the light, and that will produce a single frequency. Given it's a large enough laser, a single frequency of light. I sort of know this ahead from looking at laser spectrums. So a laser spectrum from a atomic laser is a pure frequency. Solid states, you tend to have little side nodes as it makes it up, because it's such a small cavity. Okay, so this produces a single frequency. So the colour of light, there's such a thing called spectral colour of light, and that's a single frequency of light. And so we can observe it. So if you imagine a metre, a millionth of a metre and half a millionth of a metre, or 550 nanometres, that's dead bang in the middle of our perception of, and that we call that green. So I just want you to imagine your nanometres expanded up into a metre ruler. I suppose we're going to have to do a metre ruler. So at a wavelength of 550 nanometres, which is 550 millimetres, that's at 5 metres, expanding. Look, 550 nanometres is green. I suppose 700 is the reddest that we can see, and the bluest that we can see is around, 400, around that region is the region that we can see. So the spectral colour refers to a single wavelength of light, and that's produced by a single atom or a laser. And that defines, that's if you imagine you've got a dial, and that will actually produce, for each wavelength, you'll see an individual colour. Of course, you can see that represents, if you like, a line, a curved line, a line in this space, and we can perceive billions of colours, not just this single line of colours. So there's this group of colours called spectral colours, and one of the spectral colours pretty much any colour is a spectral colour. It's hard to say. So that's Roy G. Biv. That's the rainbow of colours. They're spectral colours. So your water drop in the sky is a little prism, and your rainbow colours are a certain line of colours. I'll get into this. So store that away. We're in the stage of discussing physical mechanisms of colours. So in that spectral range, you've actually got going way, way out, you've got radio waves, microwaves, infrared, visible colours, and ultraviolet, deep ultraviolet, X-rays, gamma rays. They're all colours, and if we had sufficiently evolved eyes and optics, we'd be able to see all those colours. They're spectral colours. And for a spectral colour, they're described by a single wavelength. And so that's in the areas of mechanically produced colours rather than perceived colours. They're called spectral colours. They're produced by laser beams or single atoms. Now, the other area is, I think, essentially once you're up to get above 100 atoms, the light produced by the first atom bounces in this little dot and bounces around, and everything gets equalized. And this process, statistical process, produces a thermal color or temperature color. So we've got another line of colors, and that's the temperature color. And so essentially, I can have on one generation of color, I can have a knob which changes the wavelength, the mirror separation in my gain medium, and that will make myself a beautiful tunable laser. I can tune the single line. Or another thing, I can actually just have a power supply heating up a metal rod, and it will produce a distribution of colours. Essentially, an atom will be excited and that light will be statistically mixed to form this beautiful, it goes each of the... It's a cubic expansion and a Gaussian tail to the end to cut off with. It's called a Planck distribution of colour. So this a red poker, which you heat it up. We've turned the knob a little bit to around 800 degrees. It's glowing a dim red. That will be producing a whole thousands and thousands of different lines of colour. Different frequencies of light, different wavelengths of light, but those frequencies will be in prescribed packages, prescribed ratio, and that's called the thermal spectrum. If I turn up the knob even more, it will go from red to yellow to blue to ultraviolet to really bright. There will be a point there which we say, that's white, because we've evolved to see the colour of the temperature colour of our sun as white. So that's a psychological psychological wavelength parameter for it. We've got these two mechanisms to start off, physical mechanisms to generate colour. One's a laser, one's a hot bar. Imagine you've got nichrome wire around it and you turn up the power supply as you heat it up. You can do that at home with a little incandescent lamp and a power supply, and as you vary the power, you can reduce the power into that, it will glow red, orange, and forward. Now, those thermal colours, well, let's stop for a moment, are the colours of stars, and one of the missing colours of thermal colours is the colour green. If you look up at night, you'll see all those thermal colours up at night. You have to go through a process, I think. Look on the internet at the colours of stars, and then go to a power supply and a light and see something gradually heat up. You'll notice that there's green is absent, and there are no green stars up there. Now, this, I suppose, is the first point where, as you know more about colours, you sort of take a different path from the rest of the human race, and things appear differently to you. So at the start of the Star Wars movies, where they show you the star field, I look at the star field and all the stars are the same icky greyish white colour, and my throat drops. I say, where's the red stars? Where are the blue stars? I hope I don't see any green stars. It sounds like an Australian children's stories, where's the green sheep? But there's no coloured stars in the Star Wars universe. And really, the Star Wars universe is sort of... It's breathtaking in that it cuts and pastes our star and puts it all throughout the universe, and everything's exactly the same. It's a very... a boring view. Just to stop here, if we could see gamma rays or X-rays, if we looked up at our galaxy, we would see, towards the centre of our galaxy, we would see this huge mushroom circular thing going above and below our galactic centre, and that's the gamma ray or X-ray burst from our central black hole heating up this large disk. And if we could see into space, the X-ray version, every galaxy we see would have this dumbbell of gas, illuminated gas below, above and below. So really our perception of space and a cultural perception is limited. The lowest level limit is people saying what the general population understands. It will feed it to them. We'll feed them these grey stars for Star Wars. The people who look down telescopes and do a bit of physics, they'll have these coloured things. And, of course, if you overlay that with your the infrared and other colours that you know that are out there, you'll know that there's more structure to see if you could only see at different wavelengths. One of the beautiful things that I do, I've got an infrared scope from Aldi. I think it costs around $200. And it is fantastic. You take it out at night and the star density increases by a factor of 30 out here in Australia, where it's a nice dark sky and we're looking directly into the Milky Way. It is a stunning thing. It allows you to see a little bit more into the infrared. And so let's summarise again. We've got our mechanical ways into producing colours, and these are conceptual colours. We can only see a small amount of them. The rainbow colours, the spectral colours, which form a line. I'm going to bring back. There's the thermal colours, which form another line of colours. So a line is that the perceived colour changes as you change the wave, the spacing between mirrors and a laser, or the temperature of your burner, which you heat things up. So we haven't quite finished yet. So if you go between a single atom and a laser, if you go into, say, an atom, it will produce a range, an ensemble of spectral colours. That is, it has a range of energy levels, which the electrons, when it's heated up, will cascade downwards. And I should say that a laser, and we'll have to go into this at a later state, has a population inversion. It has negative temperature. Time is reversed in it. If you actually go through all the Einstein's thing, and it has only one energy level. But an atom, you have multiple energy levels. And so for every atom which glows in space, it produces a colour signature, a fingerprint, a combination lock, like your password, a password for it saying it's a particular colour. And this is, you say, oh, well, a star itself is one of these big black body things. There are multiple atoms. It's heating up. It's like really hot. Around the outside of a star is something called the chromosphere. So what happens is that the star magnetic field oscillates and ripples and creates microwave heating of the or radio frequency heating of the atmosphere. The atmosphere goes up really high in temperature, and it actually produces an atomic lamp. And so around every star you have these emission lines, and these emission lines for every element is a series of lines. And this is where we go at the very start of the super colour detector called a spectrometer. And we go into what spectroscopy is. So back in the Middle Ages, you had ghost hunters. That is, people felt there was possession. And these people would go in with prisms and look for light. And it'd split the light and it'd see an aura, different colours coming out. And the unpicking the different light inside a colour was seen as seeing the ghost of it, the spectra. So spectroscopy is ghosts hunting for light. So if I see some light and I look at it, so far you're with me, I can look at it, and if I sing a single line, a single frequency, I know that's from a laser, and I can see that frequency, I can see the wavelength of that frequency, I can tell you the spacing between the mirrors, or the gas involved, engulfed in that spacing between the mirrors, if it's a solid state state device. I'm going to cough for a moment. Okay. Or if it's got a smooth rainbow, but it's got this curve, a featureless curve, I can say, well, that's from a hot object. I can tell you it's hundreds of atoms, more, hundreds of atoms up to a massive star. And that's a black body radiation. I can tell you the temperature of it, so I can start to tell you about it. But if I see gas, if I put a molecule into gas, say like if you put salt into a blue cooktop flame, if I put salt into it, or things, I could see colours off it. And if I put that through a spectrometer, now a spectrometer traditionally was a prism. Now a prism has got the fantastic thing is that a prism is made out of glass. The glass nearly absorbs the light. It does it with a complex number, and therefore different frequencies. It absorbs the light, holds it back, and re-emits it. So it retards the wavelength of the light, and so it slows the light up. And so the more the light is slowed up, the more it's swung around. So depending on what your prism is, you've got Pink Floyd, the more it grabs the light and slows it up, the more the greater angle it will spin it through. You'll have to go through. You can got your rainbow spread. I'm pretty sure that it's the blue at the bottom. Blue's grabbed the most. Just thinking where the absorption line is for most glasses. You can actually have a reverse prism, but it's blue at the bottom and red at the top. Blue's grabbed more, slowed down more, and so it goes through a greater angle. What happens is that, say for atoms in stars where there's not much going on, you can actually use your spectroscope. And there's another thing called diffraction grating, which is basically a musical instrument for light. It's got a frequency, and when the frequency of the light hits the frequency of the diffraction grating, it pings it off at a particular angle. But that will produce a spectrum, and an atomic spectrum will be these fine spectral lines, but at a ratio. So you'll get sometimes, say for hydrogen, you'll, in a typical view, you'll get 10, but if you're going up to iron or something like that, you'll get hundreds of these individual lines, and you can look at the position of these lines and the intensity, relative intensity of these lines, to see how the electrons been hit up in the gas and dropping down. And indeed, you can see where the gas is gently heated, the electrons just lobbed up, or the electrons rattling through it and producing it. You can imagine, coins dropping down through these options to produce different amounts of light. So with this spectroscope, you can look up at the sun or this thing and actually see the individual lines and see the individual atoms there. And so, indeed, an individual atom has a colour. And that is, and we have to get, we'll eventually get back to the colour that you perceive, but its colour is defined by its spectrum. So it's from red to blue, the amount of red lines and blue lines for its spectrum. That's the colour of it. Then we start to really get a hell of a lot of information. So one would say, look, if I've got, I'm just saying this as a mental exercise for you. Say if I go and order online a hydrogen lamp. So a hydrogen lamp is a very, very I suppose almost sacred theme, it will produce a pinkish glow because there's a beautiful red line. That's a line, but the very first line between the third and second energy level, a beautiful thick, fine red line. And so if I go order online two hydrogen lamps and I hook them up, and if I've got a spectroscope, I should be able to look at one spectroscope and see exactly the same lines on one, on the other. They've got the same gas pressure, and the same power supply. So if I heat them up differently, there'll be a slight difference in the intensity of different lines in there, and a slight pressure difference. They should be exactly the same. And this is this exercise. So they are producing a colour. We now have to talk about the perceived colour, the colour that we receive in our spectroscope. I will get into the cute animals a bit later on. But indeed, if you had a really, really good spectroscope you had your two hydrogen lamps, lamp A and lamp B, you would be able to tell a difference between it. And one of the things is you'd have the spectrum from lamp A, and then over in a different part of the lab, you'd set it up and look at the spectrum of lamp B, and that they would be different. Now, I'm going to give it to you. If you swap the two lamps over, what was spectrum of lamp A will be spectrum of lamp B, and vice versa. So you can actually find positional information about where your lamp is if you've got a good enough spectroscope. The reason is that the Earth's magnetic field will be a slightest bit different in those two positions, and the magnetic field will have an effect on those spectral lines, positions, that will affect the atoms. And another thing is that light will experience a different gravitational redshift as it comes towards you. These are really, really small things. And as you, I suppose, heat up the lamp, the pressure may change a little bit. The lamp may, the quartz may, it may expand, but the gas may expand more. There'll be more collisions, and so you'll see the light. So suddenly you've got your laser light and your thermal colour temperature. Your atomic spectra starts to produce a hell of a lot more information, and so we've created like a super eye, which is super intelligent and can tell you fantastic things about gravitational fields, speeds, differences. In fact, the cops use this thing to fire light at you as you're speeding towards them, and they can see the light being shifted, Doppler shifted, the spectrum. They've got a spectrometer in here, and you're nicked. As one of the things, you can tell so much from it. Now, to be fair, let's go back into the natural world. I'm a duck, quack, 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 and I have an extra colour perception, a genuine extra colour perception, and I'm flying along. I can see a different shade of green, and I can see where the water is, the ponds are, beneath the foliage, and I can learn how to fly that way. Or I'm a pigeon, I can see so much. I can also see the polarization of light. There's so much information there on something, and we tend to ignore all that information because, look, I've got my cultural knowledge, the customary knowledge of Roy G. Biv, and that's it, and and the door's shuttered. So a lot of people are shuttered, I suppose, to speak, and they tend to be in the playground and in life are very aggressive people. And you just have to quietly, just peacefully look down to the spectroscope and start doing the maths in your head and start reading books and put their I suppose their aggressive world to Asai. So let's go up here. We've got the spectral lines of laser lines, a single line. You've got the curve, beautiful curve lines, the basic curve lines. And you've got the complex lines seen on a spectroscope. You can tell so much, almost an incredible amount of information, temperature, electrons, pressure, gas composition, speed, everything. Because basically this light comes in, it's spread out, and you've got the amount of light every single wavelength exquisitely measured, and you can use that information to tell an exquisite amount of information. Now, this is not this type of thing in a different setting is used at airports. They swab you, and they can detect a minute amount of explosives. So we can detect so much from light, and I suppose modern warfare is about increasing the spectral view of soldiers, such that they've got infrared and they can see through smoke and stuff like that. So there's these three types of light. And this is the starting from the textbooks to the instruments. So we've gone from there. Now I want to go to the humble human. Now the humble human has a spectroscope in their eye. So the eye has retinal receptors, and there's two types of retinal receptors. There's the low light black and white receptors on your peripheral vision, on the side of your vision, and they're rod cells. That's from the way they look. So they've got a large photoreceptive area, and they can operate at very low low light. Sorry, I've just got to cough for a little while. And in daylight, they're anesthetized by something called visual purple. So in a bright room, your eye emits low vision anesthetic to switch off your high sensitivity, low light vision, so it doesn't swamp your high light color vision. And so you have color, three cones, the cone cells. So these are cone cells in that they can have very high density and color, and the actual, so the cones, so if you can imagine stacking bottles, if you lay your bottles out, you'd have a large number of bottles flat on the floor. They're your rod cells. Cone cells are more like stacked bottles, so they're very well ordered and stacked, very high density. They're in your central vision. So your central vision has color vision. So how come you have, if I've got black and white vision on my peripheral and color in the center, how does that work? How can that possibly work? If I've got two types of vision receptors, how does it work? Well, your brain takes a little patch. It's almost like JPEG. Your brain is sufficiently fast that it will paint its known colour into your black and white perception on the outside of your eye. There's heaps of optical illusions where you can see this painting effect. So your central vision, which is oscillating around all the time, will paint effective colour off to your side vision. So again, if you're at night and you want to, say, operate at night vision, low vision, the main thing is you don't use your central vision, you use your peripheral vision, and you scan around to keep on moving the peripheral vision. One of the things is that this peripheral vision is for is got high speed. So if you say, I saw something out of the corner of my eye, that is, you've detected movement. out of your corner of your eye, you haven't detected the colour, but your high-speed receptive with your rod cells. Your cone cells come in three types. R, G, B. And this is where we start to go on that awesome journey from, I suppose there are four types of vision, natural vision, that are in existence. So the majority of people are S, R, G, B. They only look at monitors, and they have bought the commercial idea that commercially, effectively, we're only going to operate with, well, I don't know, 60% of our available colours, and we're going to stick with that sort of triangular palette. I'm going to talk about what I'm talking about, triangular. Then there's the next, sort of the Adobe RGB, which is saying, well, look, realistically, our technology at the moment can go in this slightly larger triangle, which is about, say, 80%. And so that's one. Two, three is someone who is aware of the entire region of colours that you can observe. So if you like, that's a bit like a spinnaker shape and colour space. I'll get into this a while. And then above that is the... So we've got three levels. Obviously, you've got the commercial everyday level, and within that commercial everyday level, you've got the people who have just been taught at kindergarten the different colours, and those people tend to be... I shouldn't say they're bullies, but they're very prone to bullying. They say, oh, that's the colour, shut up, move on, I'm not interested in talking with you. You've got those people, you've got the tech heads, and then you've got the physicists, and then you've got the spectroscopists. And let me say what I mean. Although you've got three cones, and I'll go into this more, you can actually... There's a trick that you can detect more colours, but there's yet another trick as a spectroscopist you can see. Because you focus different colours, you focus at different distances. So UV, you have to focus a bit more intensely to do it. So the focus of your eye is not as good at UV. So you have to change your focus at for ultraviolet versus... say violet or reds or something like that. And so you've got this fourth level of being able to detect what colour is by how it focuses. So if you're really switched on, you can actually look at the focus there. And yet another thing is, if you look at the extreme ultraviolet, which you can still perceive, you will see a whitish halo. And what actually happens is that ultraviolet is scintillating, causing the gel in your eye to glow. And so you'll be able to see, when you're looking at it through a spectroscope, you will see the red. And then you'll have to change the focus of your eyepiece a bit as you get to purple, and you get to ultraviolet where you can barely perceive it. You'll see that it's got a haze around it because this ultraviolet is coming in and causing your eyes to glow. So if you actually go into the disco scene with black lights, hold a black light up to someone's eye and look into it. Their eye liquid is glowing this milky white. So those last two things, the focus and the glow, is an extra addition to focus. Now, essentially you've got three cones, and that means you've got a fairly bottom-of-the-range spectrometer around your eye. So what's really good is that you can actually see all your entire picture. The spectrometer is done, it's overlaid with the actual picture. So it's low quality, but it covers the whole picture here. Now, the thing is that those three cones will produce three levels of signal. So if you said, look, the level of signals of one cone will be 1 to 1,000, the other one will be 1 to 1,000, the other one will be 1 to 1,000, I can actually therefore say that any colour that I see will be equivalent to 1,000, 1,000, 1,000. Any light I see, the actual signal I get from there will be 1,000, 1,000, 1,000. You guess it. If it's 1,000, 1,000, 1,000, it's white, and if it's 0, 0, 0, it's black. So there's a little bit of maths on it, and you probably have to go into it. Now, the interesting thing is what's happened is that I don't think the dinosaurs had colour vision, but the dinosaurs. Your eyes are a result of evolution. So, essentially, dinosaurs rule the day. So, colour vision is useful during the day. At night, colour vision is not so much, it's intensity. And so what's happened is us mammals evolved in general to have just two cones, two overlapping cones. When I say overlapping, the spectrum is overlapping. I'll get back to it. In a couple of instances, we've re-evolved to have three colour vision. Birds have beautiful three colour or multicolour vision. And so we've evolved or mutated to be able to see red. Rather than red and blue, we can see red, green and blue. And there's a bit more to it. That's partly because of our life is tiny little shrews up trees. We've had to actually see fruits, and the trees, fruiting trees, have actually led us to have colour vision, so we can see the ripe fruit and when it's actually fermenting and the seed is ready to go and we're ready to eat it, we'll eat the colourful seed, go around and poo into a tree, if you'd like to think of it that way. We'll go around, eat. A lot of the fruits are laxative. You've got a laxative value. Say if you're a fig or something like that, you go pick it up, go yum yum yum, it's full of sugar. Okay, it's also full of fibre and laxatives, and you go crap a tree somewhere. It's an ideal thought. So we've developed this way. We have got three different zones. Now, thing is that the zones overlap, and the really incredible thing, so brace yourself for it, and this is a thing which is really not described in the, I suppose, encyclopedias, Wikipedias and stuff like that. Our red cone is sensitive to the red, so that's 700 nanometers, peaking at 6, dropping down again. And then it doesn't drop to exactly zero, near zero. And then our red cone goes along and around 400 nanometers, it has a second wind. So our red cone is actually sensitive to the red and a small amount of ultraviolet. Our green cone has got a good, really reasonably good overlap between the... it's most sensitive in green, but it's got a wing which descends into the red, the deep red. It's not sensitive, and then it extends into the blue a bit. So the actual spectral clout of our cones have an overlap, and it's this overlap which can mean that the one colour can excite three cones, and we can actually compute this in three-dimensional space and actually synthesize a complex color from RGB. So this beautiful thing is, if you look at your TV set with a microscope, you'll see RGB, those three basic colors. We're looking in printed three basic colors, but by racing that we, our brain can produce that. Now, the important thing is that we can actually represent so those three colours we can perceive, if you like, if you put a three-dimensional box X, Y, Z, on the X you put the on the X you put the red, on the Y we're going to put the blue, on the Z we're going to throw this away, the green, and your colour perception will therefore be points at that, in that on a surface, a three-dimensional surface. Now, what we can do is we can squish that, and that's called the simplex method, into just the ratio between the red and the blue, and that will produce like a Spinnaker sail of perception. Now, on the outer surface of that, you'll have your spectral colours. That's produced by one frequency alone. So one frequency alone, and your red will produce only your red cell, so 100%. As you go a bit bluer, it will produce a fraction of your blue and a fraction of your red. And so it will come off the bottom axis for your blue and start to go up. And on the edge is your spectral colours. And what will happen is it will actually hook back again, because your red cells, red cone cells, are spectrally sensitive in the ultraviolet. And so some of your ultraviolet light will be a combination of blue and your red. Your red will be firing away, and your blue will also be firing away. And it will think, is that, that's ultraviolet, or is it purple? This is the way you can mix purple from red and blue, can look purple. Now, people don't question this. Going along the outside of this, you've got the Spinnaker shape. I forgot what this is called. This is your basic colour chart. Now, you've squashed it down. Now, what it means is that for any type of light, you'll get a ratio between red and blue. And so that will, for any particular potential colour, you will be able to draw a line from the origin of zero red and zero blue up along that ratio that you've observed. Now, the you can fix it such that the amount of green light will then determine where on that line you perceive that colour. So I encourage you to go to the internet and look at these colour Spinnakers. I've got the actual name of them. And on the outside, we've got the spectral lines, so this is a good view from it. And these are only human-observed, perceived things. And it's got this overlap due to the fact that the red cone cell has a second wind of perception in the ultraviolet. And as you go further away from the origin, you go to closer into the green, you'll notice it's green, that allows you to track it there. And so essentially you can have all detectable human colours as on this chart. So if you go into the internet and say type Adobe RGB or sRGB, you can actually see where people have said, look, this is the reddest that we're going to do, this is the how we're going to fool the eye. And then don't go the whole way, and you can actually see inside it these triangles, reduced spaces with which we believe. And we're just using, cultural clout to force the human race into this reduced colour palette. The other aspect of it is, going back to it, you notice how at the start we had this laser. The laser light gives you the trajectory on the outside of the Spinnaker. There's another sort of thread which starts off at the red and winds it all the way through into the centre of your Spinnaker. The very centre of your Spinnaker is white. That's equal amounts of RGB in your eye, a balanced amount. And what happens is that there's this line which is called the thermal line, the colour temperature line, which is this statistical, fundamental quantum mechanical, it is quantum mechanics, okay, quantum mechanics, which actually takes you from the rightmost, the redmost, and wanders all the way through white into blue, and it misses green completely because there's no such thing as green infrared, so green colour temperature. You see, and this is the other line. And so with that, you have this picture of of colours. You've got the philosophical, the scientific understanding how colours are made. You've got the mechanical views, our spectrometers, which can create so much information. Then you've got the biological view that let's limit it down to just three filters. And then we've got the mathematical picturing of three filters in this spinnaker of colour. And on that, we can, as almost a cultural map, we can see, that's how humans can perceive laser light. And this is thermal light. And those triangles are cultural triangles with which we're limited. I suppose the point to reflect, so that's what I've given you. It's a long talk. I suppose the point to reflect on is, if you're still listening, I suppose, if you've switched off saying, oh, I know my colours, you know the colours that you've been taught, you know, a certain amount. And if you want to, I suppose, operate in life with a sort of a limited amount of understanding, and when someone sort of stops and talks, say, about a painting or looks at a painting. So a gallery is just absolutely fantastic because these painters have gone in that spinnaker, they've found a new colour and they've experimented and painted up a different area and the colours and the mood with it. So for me, the sort of final thing is you've got this dimension of theory, equipment, biology going through. But you've got another dimension of how deeply do you want to go, and what do you do if you're not going deeply? And this is one of the profound insights, that people who don't go deeply into it tend to be aggressive on other aspects of life. They're the people who've promoted themselves to jobs and pushed themselves forward. And I'm out here in the Australian, and you are. I'm out here in the Australian bush. You'll be out in different parts of life, just working your way through it. These people will come and go. They'll build their empires and stuff like that. But the theory and the knowledge is something which we have only really picked up in the last 100 years, and it's worthwhile doing it. So if I can only ask that you go to the internet, there's very few really comprehensive articles. But one of the things I want you to do is look at the spinnaker of the colour chart of all possible colours, and look at those restrictive triangles and the lines, and to look about it. And I must admit, I've produced 600 works of I suppose digital art, and my spectrum, which I've used, is purely the spectral colours. I've just restricted myself purely to that band of spectral colours on the outside, because I think it's so intense. If you've worked in a laser lab, they're the colours of lasers are the lasers on the extreme band of that spinnaker, one frequency and one frequency only. And for me, the digital art that I've produced with that it's got this enormous intensity, whereas I suppose a lot of the other artists that you see are using different colour temperatures and different ideas. And of course, our world is changing very much as we have LEDs and things like that. Our colour temperatures are changing. Okay, that's the end of this rather long talk. I don't apologise for it. It is a big topic, and people make it a small topic, but then they lose out for it. Thanks for listening, and in the meantime, keep on doing science.